Kunstradio. Radiokunst. Fearless Radio, curated by Saud Radio. Heute präsentieren wir den ersten Teil dieser neuen Serie, bestehend aus 5 Teilen insgesamt, zu hören in den kommenden Kunstradiosendungen. Anna Socik wünscht Ihnen einen guten Abend. Saud Radio ist ein Webradio, das von der italienischen Radiokünstlerin Anna Raimondo und dem marokkanischen bildenden Künstler Younes Baba Ali im Mai 2012 gegründet wurde und seither als internationale Plattform für Radiokunst betrieben wird. Wir haben Saud Radio eingeladen, eine Curated-By-Serie mit Künstlerinnen aus ihrem Umfeld zusammenzustellen. Geografisch ist das vor allem Afrika, Asien und der Nahe Osten. Ein Teil der Serie wird von einer Künstlerin gestaltet, die in Karago in Ruanda geboren wurde und in Brüssel lebt. Aurelie Liermann wird morgen Abend, am Montag, den 24. Februar, in Wien zu Gast sein bei einer Kunstradio-Veranstaltung zur Serie Fearless Radio. Wir laden Sie ein, bei freiem Eintritt in den Zauberberg im Klangtheater zu kommen. Das ist ein Hörkino im Radiokulturhaus, Argentinerstraße 30a, 1040 Wien. Gemeinsam mit Aurelie Liermann präsentieren wir ihr Radiostück für Fearless Radio als Vorpremiere und wir werden morgen Abend auch mit den beiden Saud-Radiomachern Anna Raimondo und Younes Baba Ali über ihre Initiative, über Radiokunst in Afrika und über Fearless Radio, Radio ohne Angst, sprechen. Morgen Abend um 20 Uhr. Wir freuen uns auf Ihr Kommen und aufs gemeinsame Hören.
Kunstradio.at.
Heute im Kunstradio also die erste Folge von Fearless Radio, einer Serie, die sich auf Michel Foucaults Konzept der Fearless Speech, also des angstfreien Sprechens, bezieht. Die Möglichkeiten, angstfrei Wahrheiten auszusprechen, vervielfachen sich im Radio, durch die Freiheit des Mediums selbst und durch seine unterschiedlichen Ausdrucksformen. Im Internet und in den kommenden Kunstradiosendungen werden wir uns ausführlicher mit diesem Curated-By-Konzept befassen.
Testing the new Sony Dynamic microphone from 3 feet. Testing the new Sony Dynamic microphone from 2 feet. Testing the new psychic demandophone from 1 feet. Testing the straight trainophone from 1 foot.
Die erste Sendung der Reihe Fearless Radio wurde von Lawrence Abu Hamdan gestaltet. 1985 im Amman geboren, lebt er jetzt als Soundkünstler in London und betreibt seit 2010 ein Projekt mit dem Titel Oral Contract. In Veranstaltungen, Publikationen, Ausstellungen und Workshops untersucht Lawrence Abu Hamdan die Politiken des Hörens mit Schwerpunkt auf die Rolle der Stimme in der Rechtsprechung. Zuerst spielen wir die Radiodokumentation The Whole Truth von 2012, in der es um die Anwendung von Stimmanalysen bei Lügendetektoren geht, also um die Stimme in Zeiten der Artificial Intelligence in weiterem Sinne. Angewandt wird solche Software sowohl von Versicherungen als auch von Grenzämtern und Notrufdiensten. Zunächst hören Sie eine Einführung des Künstlers in englischer Sprache. Die deutsche Übersetzung finden Sie auf kunstradio.at. Es folgt dann das Stück The Whole Truth in 30 Minuten Länge und danach hören wir noch hinein in Lawrence Abu Hamdans Oral Contract Archiv.
My name is Lawrence Abu Hamdan. I'm an artist who has been invited by Fearless Radio, the project by Saud Radio, to produce 55 minutes of radio for you. And my work often leads me to the direction of radio, but in many other disciplines as well. I'm not a sound artist, but more an artist working with listening. And more often than not, I'm interested in the relationship of listening and politics and the role of voice in law. This is maybe begun through an engagement from early age of working with DIY punk music, setting up concerts, doing gigs, where in which we the whole aim was to try and avoid the music industry and all the trappings in which the professionalization of music, where nobody gets paid well and nobody has a good time and the audience pay a lot of money and the drinks are very expensive, is all eradicated in favor of a more horizontal structure. So very early on for me, the relationship of music and politics was very clear. And so that sort of extended into thinking about other forms of listening. My work is often journalistic. It has some investigative practice within it. And often I think about what I do not as journalism, but maybe perhaps thinking about how journalism could be a bit more like what I do. In the documentary I'm going to play today, which is called The Whole Truth, the subject of this documentary is a new set of algorithms that are being employed all over the world by authorities to measure through the vocal cords whether somebody is telling the truth or lying. So it's a lie detector that uses the intensity, vocal intensity, and the glottal tension of the vocal cords to assess a whole series of criteria and judge if the person in front of the microphone is anxious. And this really has a remarkable resonance to Foucault's work, in which speaking the truth is a very difficult act, a full body kind of experience which you sweat through and which you push yourself to do. It's a very corporeal experience, and I think that in some senses this lie detector, this very basic algorithm, literalizes somehow that dichotomy, in the sense that there, for them, the tensions of the vocal cords are actually to do with lying, whereas in Foucault this very bodily experience embodies the truth itself.
Testing the new Sony Dynamic microphone from 3 feet. Testing the new Sony Dynamic microphone from 2 feet. Testing the new Psychic Demandophone from 1 feet. Testing the straight tiny phone from 1 foot.
By you to tell the truth, comma, the whole truth, comma, and nothing but the truth. Is that correct, sir?
The whole truth, testimony, truth, and technology. A documentary about the role of the voice in the age of artificial intelligence.
People call 911 or 112 in the Netherlands to report some incident.
Right, and you're not at the pub anymore, are you?
No, just walked out.
They had a lot of problems with people calling 911 for fun.
Well, why would they stay in a pub that was on fire?
A gang of youths putting petrol on a car.
Are you telling the truth?
Yeah.
And then the voice analysis would help in figuring out if it is actually an incident or not.
Based on the voice of the caller, if somebody is really maybe a witness of an incident or something, that he would be more alert, and the system could notice the way in which they are speaking and then prioritize. The operator could also become stressed. He could see something as his own emotional level and see, am I going like really angry towards them? Shall I leave it?
Emotional situations, your muscles will tense. That's the fight or flight reaction, right? You want to run or you want to fight, or that's just a bodily reaction. Because of that, also the vocal cords will get tenser. And because of that, the sound you make, there are small changes in that based on all kinds of other things. We move around, the different amounts of airflow. Those small changes, they tend to disappear if the vocal cords are more tense. And by now it's used as one of the standard features in emotion recognition. We found that you can detect that part of the signal, and that's often called jitter, and you can hear that.
Rather than the words we choose, it is the particular flexing of our larynx, the inadvertent tremblings of our vocal cords, that is used to measure the severity of the emergency we may face. In this sense, the voice is reduced to an active muscular movement, and our ability to communicate trauma a mere physical capacity. In this emergency call traumometer, developed at Delft University, muscular stress and tension resonates through the voice as an indicator of truth. But in the next example, these same physiological symptoms of stress reveal the opposite, a lie. Layered voice analysis 6.50, or LVA, is software developed for interrogations by an Israeli company called Neme Cisco. It is distributed and sold around the world by the Wisconsin-based firm Voice Analysis Technologies. Again, it is the voice that is used as a kind of stethoscope, an instrument to measure internal bodily responses, a material channel that allows the law's listening to bypass speech and delve deeper into the body of its subjects.
Hello, this is Lynn.
Hi, Lynn. It's Lawrence here.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, good.
I am Lynn Robbins. I founded this company in 2007. My background was military and aviation. I was an air traffic controller in the United States Army. And what was happening in today's world, 9/11, of course, was devastating to everybody, but there were a lot of applications that I saw for it.
What was once science fiction has become the latest tool in law enforcement.
At first glance, this looks like a basic laptop computer with a microphone off to the side. But don't underestimate this little box. It has the potential to be so much more.
I came across this technology, and it just provided a whole new way that I could make a difference in people's lives.
This is being touted as the next generation of lie detector, layered voice analysis, or LVA. It is software installed on a laptop that analyzes voices.
It's currently being used on a trial basis with the LA County Sheriff's Department's crime lab.
Primarily, the layered voice analysis, the LVA 6.50, is an investigative focus tool.
The technology works by analyzing stress in a person's voice while they are speaking. Speech starts with the brain, which, like a conductor, orchestrates the lungs, vocal cords, tongue, teeth, and lips to produce a sound wave that we recognize as language. According to voice analysis technologies, brainwave activity like deceptiveness shows up as tiny involuntary changes in the speech sound wave. The LVA uses thousands of mathematical equations to analyze and classify this micro change, and then alerts the interviewer if the interviewee is lying.
The LVA 6.50 is sold primarily to law enforcement. It's sold to prisons,
insurance fraud, law enforcement on sex offenders, and military intelligence.
For military, for investigations, interrogations.
Some European countries are using it at airports to screen for falsified passports and terror
suspects. South Africa, Dominican, Mexico, I believe China.
Harrow Council has been running the country's first pilot scheme since May. The specialist software analyzes speech patterns to identify suspect callers who may be telling lies over the phone when lodging their benefit claims.
They've proved so successful, 15 more councils will be given the cash to install the equipment. It's expected the lie detectors will eventually be rolled out nationally. The government claims this will save taxpayers tens of millions of pounds.
Layered voice analysis is a frequency-based technology that allows the user to interview somebody, and it applies hundreds of mathematic algorithms to what that person is saying.
She helped create a program that can detect if you're lying, even if you don't know you're doing it.
It indicates possible mental illness, possible drug use. It can indicate embarrassment, fear, rejection, excitement. If the person is unsure, it detects all of those, a variety of emotions in the human voice.
My name is Tom Rice. I am a researcher on sound and listening, and I'm a lecturer in social anthropology at the University of Exeter. The stethoscope itself was invented in 1816. Doctors weren't able to depend on patients to provide what they felt were objective accounts of their illnesses. The reason stethoscopic listening emerged was that sounds from hearts, from stomachs, from lungs were voices which couldn't lie and which didn't deceive doctors. There's this interesting notion that the body wants to say things, regardless of perhaps the patient's attempts to disguise those signs, that the body gives them away and communicates them to the doctor in some way.
Traditional lie detectors or polygraphs measure your breathing, your heart rate, even how much you sweat. But this latest innovation is checking for lies exactly where they start, with the human voice.
Lung sounds were the first area to receive really intensive attention from Laennec, the inventor of the stethoscope, himself. He was particularly interested in the fact that he could discern what he called a pectriloquy. In the chests of tuberculosis patients, the voice, as they spoke, seemed to be transferred somehow directly into Laennec's ear. He noticed this very localized amplification of the voice.
Whispered pectoriloquy is an exaggerated form of bronchophony. When there is consolidation of lung tissue, even a whispered sound may be louder and easily heard while listening with the stethoscope. Ask the patient to whisper 99 or 123. Marvin, when you feel my stethoscope on your back, I'd like you to whisper 99.
That sound, the pectriloquy, Laennec noticed was only observed in patients who, although they might not have been suffering from tuberculosis at the time that he listened, later died of it, and so must have been in the early stages of infection at least. And that enabled him to produce a sign which he felt at least was definitively diagnostic of tuberculosis. Again, it's not the content of the voice necessarily, but it's the substance of the voice which becomes subject to kind of medical diagnostic scrutiny.
if that crime was not committed by that person, but that person had guilty knowledge of the crime, I will be able to see that guilty knowledge as well. Whereas if you weren't using the technology, there's no way in the world you could. So it's a very unique piece of equipment.
The stethoscope does a lot of different things, but one of the things it does is to produce a distance between doctor and patient, and that distance says a lot of different things about relationship between doctor and patient. So, for example, originally, prior to the invention of the stethoscope, doctors would have to press an ear to the patient's body. And it's very easy to imagine that working in Paris in the early 19th century, when tuberculosis was the major disease that they encountered, patients would come to his clinic, probably quite unwashed, probably very sick. It's probably intuitive that you wouldn't want to press an ear to the patient's body who's in that condition. So there's a kind of hygienic distance.
Unlike a polygraph test, this does not require someone to be hooked up to a machine. It only needs a voice, and that voice can come in person or from a recording.
There's also a social distance in that he marks himself out as somebody who doesn't want to get too close to a patient.
We don't have to wire them up with galvanic skin responses or respirators. It does it in real time.
But the major distance is really a perceptual one, in that it creates a detachment and a private auditory space in which the doctor can reflect on the sounds of the patient and can reach diagnostic judgments.
So there's a kind of like shift which happens from listening to the patients to the listening to the body, right?
That's it, yeah. That's a really fundamental reorientation that the stethoscope expresses. And in fact, it's even preferred that patients keep quiet while doctors listen to the body. Had just become things to be listened to.
It doesn't matter what language they speak.
Doctors and the medical students were just listening past them as people, in fixing entirely on their sounds and neglecting things that they might say. Well, they're reported to be made to feel like medical objects, objects of clinical interest, but specifically auditory curiosities, things to be listened to, rather than people to be encountered and engaged with.
I would put it in a radio car and make it available to every police officer.
Commander Sid Hale is the tech guru for the L.A. County Sheriff's Department.
What advantages it has over the conventional devices is that the first thing is it requires no cooperation by the suspect. So that if a person's just lying, we can tell right then. We don't have to wait for a polygraph examiner to tell us. We can run it right beside them while we're looking at a computer. They don't even need to know.
So you don't necessarily need someone's consent to use it?
No.
This would be an excellent tool for airports. Before they cross through your customs, they have no rights in the United States until they go through customs. So you can run a recording on them before they get to the United States or before they go through our customs agents, and they have no rights. It's our right to determine whether or not they're bringing illegal substances or illegal immigrants into our country. If you look at a prison environment, prisoners obviously have no rights while they're incarcerated other than to be taken care of and not abused. Right. But even if they did have those rights, normally the person who does not want to participate is the person who has a guilty conscience. They're guilty of something. There is an anomaly in sex offenders that shows up on this technology. It is an incredible indicator of whether or not that person has committed that crime and the profile of that person.
When subject to these systems of voice analysis, the voice becomes divided into the words we say and the way we say them. When we are called to testify or placed under interrogation, this division of the voice produces two witnesses. One witness on behalf of language, and the other witness speaking on behalf of the body. Often these two testimonies are corroborated by each other, but they can also betray one another. An internal betrayal between language and body, between subject and object, between fact and fiction, exists in a single human utterance. Yet in such an internal conflict, the body has an unfair advantage. It is incapable of lying. The body is innocent to the intentions that corrupt our speech. However, while our bodies always speak the truth, the same cannot be said for LVA 6.50. As this software itself is riddled with the intentions of its makers, using it to look for the truth buried in our bodies will only reveal what lies beneath its surface.
I do know that there have been people that have tried to reverse engineer what we do, and they've not been successful in doing so. Primarily because they don't understand the original recipe for it.
So this is an like exact replica of their program, copycatted their algorithm based on their patent. They had written their code like in the patent.
So you are a mathematician. And you work with sort of computer programming?
Yeah, like mathematical programming.
And why did he want to copycat the algorithms?
I think the motivation is to, save people from being fooled by this. I mean, okay, if it's a game or an app where you, like, play Is My Friend Lying? But, I mean, it's obvious that it's just a game, but since this got real applications and real consequences, it makes it very dangerous. Because, someone's life could be ruined because of a verdict based on this fake algorithm. So this is a sound recording that you see here that we made a couple of weeks ago. And if you look like very, very closely at it, like we're talking microsecond, you see like small peaks.
Yeah.
And Nemesis Cisco has like based their algorithms on these small peaks.
On a micro level, if there's many small peaks,
yeah,
in volume, in amplitude,
yeah, exactly,
then it's more likely to say that the person is stressed or is,
yeah.
And then if there's more level in terms of amplitude on a micro level, then it's more likely to say that it's a true statement.
Yeah. There's one person in the lab who got like a lot more lying results than everybody else just by saying vowels. And I don't know why that is. There's a Swedish vowel called Å. That one is completely true according to the data. But when he says Ooh, it's a complete lie. And the ah is obviously true, but ear is a lie. The sound e maybe creates more trembling. You can hear him if you want. So this is. Yeah, that's his.
And that was true.
That's true. But. This is false. And I think it has to do that he can't hold it as well. So, I mean.
Yeah.
It's easier to stay on the same tone or the same.
Could you play the lie again? Play the lie one?
Yeah. This one is outsmart.
Outsmart?
Yeah. So she's trying to outsmart you. Whatever that means. And there's one guy who almost at the office who's the most honest according to this algorithm, and he's Norwegian. That's the truth. And that's the truth.
And a lie by him?
He didn't generate any lie.
And have you been tested?
Yeah.
And how did you fare?
I'm actually, except for my vowels, like in combination, I'm mostly true.
So can we hear your truth and your false?
Yeah, this is the lie. That's the truth. It's a slight difference in volume, but apart from that, it's the exact same thing. And I wasn't thinking, or I wasn't lying. One of them, obviously, since it's nonsense.
And what about the case against you guys? Is that something, like, you can talk about?
When you called me, I first was worried about that it was someone from Nemesis or something like that that wanted to see our code, to see how far we've gotten, because Francisco has showed me that there's a lot of traffic from the city where the Nemesis company is at. They're, like, following him very closely. And of course, it's bad for their business.
So what's the future of LVA? What do you see the potential applications in the future?
Well, I'd like to see it used more on our borders, more for homeland security applications. We're all involved in foreign activity as far as what's going on in Afghanistan and Iraq and countries like that, where we're turning over the control or turning over the maintenance of those countries and to their own people again. And in order to establish whether or not we're putting credible people, training credible people, giving credible people our weapons, it would be good to be able to analyze those people and make sure that their intent is not to destroy the government that's in place or to carry out some terrorist activity. I think it's going to grow tremendously because it's the least invasive and the most effective.
You have something that's very wrong.
Even in real time, the machine seems to detect my attempts at deception, even my attempts at honesty.
Do you live in LA?
I live, yes, in Los Angeles, in the city of Los Angeles.
In clinical trials, Robin says the technology has a 95% success rate.
I do think that you can trace a direct lineage here between the stethoscope and the software. They are versions of one another, separated by a certain amount of technological development. It is the technological mediation between the listener and the voice, between the listener and the body. what I find troubling, at least, or at least where I felt the comparison broke down, was that in her use of the program as demonstrated here, a tab flashes when and says truth or lie, and that takes out the interpretative role of the listener, which is very pronounced in stethoscopic listening, that doctors are always conscious that they're working to interpret the sounds. It's really strange. I was kind of hoping that this was going to open up a whole new set of auditory skills, which I suppose it could, but they seem to have, in the interest of making it user-friendly, have deferred all the responsibility of auditory judgment to the computer.
Lastly, you have the patient stick their tongue out and phonate, say, ah.
Lie. Lie. The voice is a complex object enriched with a concoction of linguistic, psychological, and physiological features. Extracting these elements from the voice is a profitable enterprise, and LVA 6.50 is just one of a wide array of security applications under development that use the voice as a biometric tool. In the near future, our voices will be used to authorize legal contracts and credit card transactions. Yet with LVA 6.50, it is not only the voice that is being capitalized upon, it is also the very act of listening. The true political power of this software is that it removes the ability to listen. Not only do these machines supposedly hear beyond the range of human audibility, they also sense emotions which are beyond human detection. This machine, therefore, will listen and feel on behalf of the human operator. Initially, it seems to be a more advanced, highly sensitive, microscopic listening that stands in the place of our would-be interrogator, caseworker, police officer, or insurance broker. But what lies beneath its surface is nothing more than a bigoted horoscope. A pseudo-scientific algorithm it may be, but a weapon it certainly is. The attraction of LVA 6.50 is clear for the governments of the United States and the United Kingdom. Without even touching someone, this system mutes speech in sites where speech acts, attacking voices before they are ever heard. Will it still be a fair hearing when nobody is listening?
What we've found is we've saved roughly £330,000 in the first 7 months of using it.
And if this trial is anything to go by, it may not be too long before the entire country follows suit.
Now the courtroom is quiet, but who will confess? Is it true you betrayed us? The answer is yes. Then read me the list of the crimes that are mine. I will ask for the mercy that you love to decline, and all the ladies go moist, and the judge has no choice. A singer must die for the lie in his voice. And I thank you.
Sure.
For doing your duty, you keepers of truth.
Oh, you're welcome.
You
God. Have a good day. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Lawrence Abu Hamdan, The Whole Truth. Sie hören das Kunstradio mit dem ersten Teil der Reihe Fearless Radio, curated by Saud Radio. Lawrence Abu Hamdan beschäftigt sich mit der Stimme im Zusammenhang mit der Rechtsprechung. Mit dem Oral Contract Audio Archive hat er ein Soundarchiv aufgebaut, das Aufnahmen von Sprache und von Rechtsprechung enthält, darunter etwa aus dem Prozess gegen Saddam Hussein, aus Verhören der britischen Polizei, aus Filmen wie Decoder und aus Lesungen von Texten, zum Beispiel Italo Calvinos Un Re in Ascolto, Ein König horcht. Aus dem Archivmaterial hat der Künstler einen Mix gestaltet, der politische und juristische Themen aufgreift, etwa Grenzen, Menschenrechte, Zeugenaussagen, Wahrheit und internationales Recht. Auf Kunstradio.at finden Sie ein Statement des Künstlers zu diesem Projekt, der Oral Contract Audio Archive Mix von Lawrence Abu Hamdan, 16 Minuten.
All the major high street names are represented on Northumberland Street and in Eldon Square Shopping Centre. In addition to large department stores, there are designer outlets and smaller specialist shops, not to mention markets and street stalls. The nearby Gateshead Metro Centre is Europe's biggest shopping and leisure complex and attracts shoppers from all over the region and beyond.
You are bound to be aware of the fact that some attack has been made upon that letter.
Let me make it very clear, Mr. Jenkins and Mr. Chairman, that I will not under any circumstances reveal the source of any information which I get as chairman of the committee. Now, one of the reasons why I have been successful, I believe to some extent, in exposing communism is because the people who give me information from within the government know that their confidence will not be violated. There is no way on earth that any committee, any force can get me to violate the confidence of those people.
Then, Senator, you did not get the 2.25-page document from the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
I did not, sir.
Now, I'm not going to ask you, and I did not intend to ask you, the name of the individual who gave you that document. But as I do understand it, Senator McCarthy, and we are trying to pursue this question to its logical end so that the committee may know all of the facts, that 2.25-page document was delivered to you by someone from the Army.
Yes, I can go a step further, Mr. Jenkins.
And perhaps in the Intelligence Department, can you go that far?
An officer in the Intelligence Department.
Senator McCarthy, when you took the stand, you, of course, understood you were going to be asked about this letter, did you not?
I assume that would be the subject.
And you, of course, understood you were going to be asked the source from which you got it.
I never try to...
Did you understand you would be asked the source?
I'll answer that. I never try to read the minds of the Senators, know what they will ask me.
Could I have the oath that you took read to us slowly by the reporter?
Mr. Wells, that doesn't seem to be an appropriate question. You were present. You took the oath yourself. You took the same oath you took.
The oath included a promise, a solemn promise by you to tell the truth, comma, the whole truth, comma, and nothing but the truth. Is that correct, sir?
Mr. Welch, you are not the first individual who tried to get me to betray the confidence and give out the names of my informants. You will be no more successful than those who have tried in the past. Period.
I am only asking you, sir, did you realize when you took that oath that you were making a solemn promise to tell the whole truth to this committee?
I understand the oath, Mr. Welch.
And when you took it, did you have some mental reservation, some Fifth or Sixth Amendment notion that you could measure what you would tell?
I don't take the Fifth or Sixth Amendment.
Have you some private reservation when you take the oath that you will tell the whole truth that lets you be the judge of what you will testify to?
The answer is there's no reservation about telling the whole truth.
Thank you, sir. Then tell us who delivered the document to you.
The answer is no. You will not get that information.
You wish then to put your own interpretation on your oath and tell us less than the whole truth?
Mr. Welch, I think I've made it very clear to you that neither you nor anyone else will ever get me to violate the confidence of loyal people in this government who give me information about communist infiltration. I repeat, you will not get their names. You will not get any information which will allow you to identify them so that you or anyone else can get their job. You can go right ahead and try and...
I wanted to have someone who could take over responsibility of administering the property and who had they misunderstood. I was trying to explain the difference between the different types of titles, who can and cannot sit in the house. I explained that I have been many times to lunch with Lord Palmer.
Pictures of Sinn Féin could be shown, but direct statements could not be heard. The broadcasters believed this meant they could either use subtitles or actors' voices to read the offending words. Actor Stephen Ray was one of the first to be contacted.
Well, I thought it was an inspired piece of journalism to find a way to circumvent this useless piece of legislation. I did the first revoicing of Gerry Adams, and then I did a further voicing of him, and then I did Martin McGuinness.
What divides Catholics and Protestants, Unionists and Nationalists in Ireland is the British presence. Take the British presence and the guns out of Ireland, there would be peace in Ireland.
I think a broadcasting ban is a legitimate weapon for the state to use, as then Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher said. It was the oxygen of publicity that was keeping the terrorists alive and promoting them.
They were able to pass a broadcasting restriction quite easily. They wanted to do something. They'd have liked to have taken terrorists off completely, and they had this rather bizarre halfway house of just not being able to hear them.
Journalists and filmmakers now had a practical problem. Every report featuring Sinn Féin had to be re-edited with actors' voices.
If everyone in Ireland tomorrow morning voted for Sinn Féin, it wouldn't make a blind bit of difference to the British government.
Practice your normal journalism. You decide to interview Sinn Féin, you're clear why, you have to do the interview, and then you have to edit it as you normally would, and at the last stage, you have to take your soundtrack off and replace it with an actor.
We will represent you in talks with the British government.
There was no pecking order as such. The most important thing was that you were available. So they would ring a bunch of voices whom they knew and just say, can you come in when? In an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, tomorrow. That was very rare. It was usually as quickly as possible today. And sometimes that could be midnight.
There was a developing skill of lip syncing, meaning that the actor speaks the words of, say, Gerry Adams in such a way that to an audience, to an untutored ear and eye, Gerry Adams, to all intents and purposes, was speaking as you saw him, and the words you were hearing were coming from his lips.
It wasn't like when you post-sync a movie, it's all lined up, you've got timings and beeps and lines going across, you've got everything. It's very clear what you have to do. That wasn't really professionally organised in that way. You just had this picture of Gerry Adams, and it was quite difficult to do.
All these guys have very distinctive voices, and Gerry Adams has almost like a fur around his voice. There's the words, and then there's some sort of like cover all the way around it. So I guess to say a non-Northern Irish ear, let's put it like that, his accent probably wouldn't be that easy to follow or that clear, whereas your average actor would have, I guess, clearer diction. There is just the possibility that the information might have come across more clearly. I probably just found it comical to sort of hear his words and see his face, but hear my voice doing the words.
The different ways that the actors delivered the voiceover had a real impact on the news reports of the day.
And who are undefeated by the British.
The actors would try and act. They would try and sound like the person who was being interviewed.
And he talks about the future of this country. Let there be no mistake about that.
They were a bit overacted. Like heavy, I am a heavy Republican.
By using actors' voices, the broadcasters were able to obey the letter of the law, but were also able to highlight the absurdities of the restrictions. Some journalists wanted the actors' voices to demonstrate that they were working under censorship.
I said to them, don't try and sound like them, just have a Northern Ireland voice. I want it deliberately out of sync so that the public know we have to go through this hoop to be there with the restrictions.
As both journalists and actors became used to the revoicing process, the delivery of the voices became more routine.
You just delivered the information and didn't worry about copying their accent or anything like that. And secondly, to be as neutral, if you like, as possible, not to colour it in any way. In fact, to do the opposite of what, as an actor, say, in a drama, you would seek to do. So you had to just sort of stand back and just say, here's the information, pure and simple, no selling.
I took it as my job to make what Gerry Adams was saying as clear as possible. If he was sending a signal, that the signal should be heard. And so I eliminated a lot of the hesitations and the ums and the ahs. Adams would have had to have been very careful because he wasn't only addressing the British public, he was addressing his own constituency. So he wouldn't have been in a position to say things in a terribly explicit way. So it meant, therefore, that you had to be even more careful that what he was saying was heard.
Um die Gleichheit aller vor dem Gesetz zu wahren. So wahr mir Gott helfe.
Some people take our exams. Mm-hmm. The certificate is marked court terminology. So this is court. Members of the jury, it is true to say this case, of course, is clearly one where the issue is whether the defendant has been accurately identified as being the driver of the vehicle seen by the police officers. You must, in assessing this evidence, look at the circumstances in which the identification took place. It is common ground that this happened sometime after midnight on 5th June, obviously after dark, in a road where there was some street lighting which was not described in any great detail. The defendant, of course, says that he was not there, but the police officers said that the street lighting was normal. To use the words of the first police officer, and the other officer made some reference to the fact that there was some form of floodlighting on the buildings on the opposite side of the road.
So bi-digital, it could be on digital audio tape, it could be on whatever medium, digital medium. We can in principle tell you exactly when it was made. So we can say, well, that recording, you started recording that at 2:03 on the 4th of August last year, and you finished recording at 2:24. So we have a way of being able to determine when it was made. And that's quite important from the editing tampering evidence, because if what the recording is a sort of mosaic of little bits of other recordings taken from different dates and times and put together to make it seem as though it's one continuous conversation, you would say, no, first 2 minutes came from the 4th of August, the second 5 minutes came from the 17th of December, and we can actually date each of the subsections. And we do that by recording mains electricity 24/7. So we have a system, well, every country in the world has a system whereby if they have alternating mains current, which we do, ours alternates at a nominal value of 50 hertz. You know, the direction of the current changes 50 times a second. Mm-hmm. That's only a nominal value. In fact, at any moment in time, it might be 49.6, it might be 50.3, it might be... So there are micro fluctuations in the rate of alternation, which alter unpredictably minute by minute. So by recording the mains hum 24/7, you know, all round the clock, all through the year, if someone gives us a digital recording, which has got mains hum on it, either because it's been made by the machine being plugged into the mains, or in a room like this, it would induct it from the fluorescent lights or whatever. We can actually look at the, if you like, the fingerprint of the mains hum correlated with a database and say that a pattern of fluctuations only occurred on the 3rd of September last year at 2, you know, and we can do it, we do it that way. And that's quite a strong tool.
And so you do that recording here, that the mains recording?
Yeah, we would.
Silence.
You don't have to say anything. She doesn't answer my question. Silence. Something we've later around the court. You do say, may we give an evidence. Is there anything that you would like to say?
Oh, yay, oh, yay, oh, yay.
Ein Mix aus dem Oral Contract Audio Archive von Lawrence Abu Hamdan, gesendet im Rahmen der Serie Fearless Radio, curated by Saud Radio. Das ist eine Serie, die sich mit der Freiheit der Sprache beschäftigt, mit moralischer Verantwortung und mit Radio als Medium des Widerstands. Morgen Abend haben wir im Klangtheater des Radiokulturhauses eine Künstlerin aus Uganda zu Gast, Aurélie Liermann. Gemeinsam mit ihr sowie mit den Saud-Radiomachern Anna Raimondo und Younes Baba Ali präsentieren wir ihr Stück Anosmia als Vorpremiere. Präsentation Anna Socik, Redaktion Elisabeth Zimmermann, Technik Wolfgang Berger.